You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including the cost to open a medical school in Reading, an update on a criminal case against a roadside zoo owner, and who's running for commissioner in Josephine County. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
Roman, you reported on a proposal by a private university in Reading to open a medical school. Where did this plan come from?
Yeah, it's coming from Simpson University, which is this private evangelical Christian liberal arts college in Reading. Their president says that he's been a part of this community group that was formed last year to explore the possibility of opening a medical school, which included physicians, educators, and healthcare leaders. And they've basically been working on this because Shasta County and kind of the North State in general has a really severe shortage of doctors, so much so that Shasta County's health officer declared it a public health crisis last year. So this group has been working, and this group and other people have been working on figuring how to attract and retain physicians in this area. A really good way of doing that is with a local medical school. Because, you know, if you're someone who wants to be a doctor from Shasta County, right now you have to go all the way down to Sacramento to go to medical school, and then it's likely you'll get a residency somewhere there, and then it's more likely you'll end up staying there and not come back to Shasta County. So, you know, people who graduate from medical schools usually do the residencies locally, and then they'll often end up staying in the area. So having a medical school in this area would be a lot more beneficial for the North State to cover that shortage. So the Simpson president said they looked at a bunch of different options, like partnering with UC Davis to establish a branch here, working with Shasta College, but he says they decided that Simpson was the best option because it's already here and already has a pre-med, pre-vet, and pre-dental programs. So they're hoping to open this up by 2029 or 2030 and have a class of around 150 to 200 students.
So Simpson University's president spoke in front of the Shasta County supervisors this week. How is the county involved in all this?
Yeah, so he came to the Shasta County supervisors meeting to basically ask the county to help invest in the project. Simpson wants the county to put in $10 million towards the medical school. So the total cost that they're estimating is between $100 and $150 million. And that is because there's a couple options. Like right now, they've kind of been working with this full-service medical school provider and developer, Salud, which could contribute money towards building a building for them, or the university could just lease a building themselves. They would also have to put down $50 million in escrow, kind of like a security deposit that's required by the accreditors to show that they're committed to the project. They also said that they're not just going to ask Shasta County for this money. They're also going to ask other counties in the North State because they would also benefit from this regional medical school.
And what did you hear from the county supervisors?
Yeah, I mean, there were mixed feelings, of course, as there always are on government boards. Kevin Cry on the board has been championing this project for quite a while. He's really been pushing to build a medical school and really wants to see it happen. But $10 million is a lot for the county to spend. It's not like they have a unlimited funding. And really the only place that they could actually take it from is this savings fund that's supposed to fund projects to address jail overcrowding. Right now the proposal is for this alternative custody program the sheriff wants to do, which has been a big issue in the county for a long time. So, you know, some of the supervisors said it could be a good idea, could work really well and be super beneficial. It has a lot of other economic benefits for the county, but they need to decide if this is the right priority over addressing jail overcrowding. You know, also one supervisor was really critical of the lack of any public documents outlining Simpson's plan. They didn't show really any presentation during the meeting. They just talked about it. And Matt Plummer had said he wants to see some kind of business plan showing how they plan to pull this off, because he mentioned he's been talking to some medical school people. And one of the biggest challenges for them is finding enough places for students to go into residencies, especially locally. And Simpson hasn't really shown they have the residencies figured out yet. The university president also said some of the plan is confidential because it's proprietary through this company, Salud. So, you know, Plummer really wants to see something publicly available to show how this will work and how this $10 million investment will pay off before they actually decide to spend it.
And when will we know if they approve the money?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't approve it right now. We just kind of, this is the start of the process to kind of get people going of thinking about it. And, you know, it's going to be considered by supervisors in June as they work on next year's budget. So hopefully we'll see some more information from Simpson. And, you know, we probably are going to see more debates, especially in June, as they talk about whether or not the supervisors should actually fund this project.
Okay. Thanks, Roman. And Justin, you had another story In the saga of the West Coast Game Park Safari in Bandon, tell us what's the latest chapter of this saga?
So we've been covering developments in this story for a while now. I think it was one of the first stories I approached you with when you began working
here. It sounded like a wild tale because this was months before the raid. And, you know, you're telling me all this stuff that then later turned out to have, like, be true.
Yeah. I'm sure it was kind of hard to trust me. You're just starting to work in the
I just met you.
So we've been covering this for a while. We're getting close to the end, I think. So this week, the owner of the West Coast Game Park Safari in Coos County pleaded guilty to 47 charges. His name's Brian Tenney.
And is that of animal cruelty and neglect?
Yeah, exactly. So most of those charges were animal neglect, but he also pleaded guilty to delivery of methamphetamine, racketeering, and unlawful possession of a machine gun. He was facing actually over 350 charges. I think it was like 371. Again, most of those were for animal neglect. Basically, it was one charge per animal that he had at the zoo. But it looks like prosecutors have agreed to drop the majority of those charges with these 47 guilty pleas he did recently.
Okay, so take us back. Remind us what happened at the zoo.
Yeah, there's a lot of background here. So the West Coast Game Park Safari was really an institution in Coos County. It's been operating for decades. Brian Tenney's parents actually owned the zoo before him. And I'm sure many listeners have seen the billboards for the place. It advertised itself as America's largest wild animal petting park. So that petting park aspect referred to a lot of deer and goats and things they kept at the property, but also had a lot of exotic animals like tigers, bears, camels, chimpanzees. And we started getting tips about those animals being in sort of rough shape and not being taken care of properly. And then the USDA began I'm sure the USDA was contacted as well. Mm-hmm. And so they were aggressively inspecting this facility. Like usually you do like a yearly inspection, but they were going back monthly and releasing these pretty damning reports. So in those reports, inspectors noted not only bad conditions for the animals, like they were malnourished, cages were clean, but also that animals had disappeared from the zoo without any documents of sale or death. An inspector found a dead tiger in a freezer.
Oh my.
So lots of strange and disturbing things.
So there were a lot of complaints against this zoo, and then things escalated last spring. What happened then?
Yeah, eventually authorities raided the zoo, and it was a huge operation, as you can imagine, with that many animals, just coordinating, you know, what do you do with those animals and storing them and things. Multiple agencies were involved from the state up to the federal level. They ended up confiscating all the animals besides a few that they were in such bad shape they had to be euthanized. But during the search of the property, they also found drugs. They found a lot of meth, which corroborated some tips I was getting. Also a lot of guns, like dozens of guns, including that machine gun that Tenney was charged for, and over $1 million in cash just in this safe in this half-constructed home outside the property. So they charged Tenney, and since then he's been out on bail, and we've been just waiting to see what happens here.
And you spoke with PETA for this story, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They've been involved in advertising the conditions at the zoo. Are they happy with this outcome?
Yeah, I spoke with an attorney at PETA. She said she was happy. She said working with law enforcement and prosecutors in Oregon especially was really great for the group. Oregon is pretty unique, actually, in terms of investigating crimes against animals. In the country, the Oregon Humane Society has its own law enforcement team, actually. It also has, this state has one of only two animal crimes forensic centers in the entire country. So that forensic center is used to collect evidence for prosecution, like with human crimes. So as part of Tenney's plea agreement, prosecutors are recommending 90 months in prison, also a ban on him owning or living with domestic animals, so pets, basically. He can't have pets anymore. And for Tenney to reimburse the state for the cost of caring for all these animals that the state seized. That sentencing will happen in July, so we'll have at least one more update on this story when it happens. But PETA, you know, this attorney told me she wants to see the maximum sentence for Tenney, and that's to really send a message to other zoo owners that, you know, there's consequences for not taking care of your animals.
And you mentioned that the authorities confiscated the animals in the zoo. And I think we have good news about where they are now.
Yeah, there's a bit of good news for this story. So the animals have made their way to sanctuaries across the country. And for this story, I was able to get a few more updates there. there was this isolated chimpanzee named George who had lived at the zoo for more than a decade. And his mate had died years ago, and he'd be living alone. And USDA inspectors actually described him as basically looking depressed,
yeah.
Just staring at a wall. You know, chimpanzees are social animals like people, so it's best when they're around other chimpanzees. He's now at Chimpanzee Sanctuary Northwest in Washington, and he just celebrated his 22nd birthday earlier this month. He's hanging out with other chimpanzees there. Looks like he's having a great time. There's actually another elderly chimpanzee named Negra, and I think they're getting along. There's a blog on that sanctuary's website, so you can follow kind of his journey.
George and Negra,
yeah,
their adventures.
Yeah, there's also a jaguar that was at the zoo that Tenney had named him Lucifer, but he's now being called Louis, so a little softer name there. He's at the Wildcat Sanctuary in Minnesota. And he's actually sponsored now by the Willamette Valley Jaguars, which is a professional basketball team in Oregon. So he's become kind of their mascot.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. Ending on a positive note there. Roman, you also brought us another election story as part of our series on the most watched races in the primary elections in our region. Tell us, what race was this one about?
Yes, this was for one seat on the Josephine County Board of Commissioners. So two seats are up for election this year there, and that's because two of the commissioners were recently recalled, Andreas Bleck and Chris Barnett. So the two people were appointed to fill those seats until the next election where they're at right now. And, you know, for this one seat, we have six candidates that have applied to this seat, which was formerly filled by Bleck.
And what do we know about the candidates?
Yeah, so one of them is the incumbent, who was one of the appointed commissioners, Colleen Martin. She's a real estate agent. She's also the former CEO of the Grants Pass and Josephine County Chamber of Commerce. And she also has run for county commission before, unsuccessfully, of course. And she is facing off against a former commissioner, John West. So West was elected in 2023, and people might remember that he was actually recalled early last year by voters. So he was kicked out of office just halfway into his first term. And that's how Andreas Bleck ended up taking the seat. So now West is trying to reclaim his position on the board. There's also four other political newcomers in the race. And there's Tracy Thompson, who's worked in some international businesses. There's Corey Wilson, who's a Grants Pass local and business owner. Connor Kirkpatrick, who's another Grants Pass local and business owner. And then there's also Alicia Louise Dove, who's a substitute teacher in Grants Pass. So all of them except for Dove were on the Jefferson Exchange recently for a debate talking about all the issues.
Well, I'm not sure how much we'll have time to get into it, but what were some of the highlights from there?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some sparring between John West and Colleen Martin. They're not the best of friends. West didn't like how Martin has, you know, been critical of their state representative, Dwayne Junker. You know, Martin says that she's critical of him because he hasn't been very effective in Salem, basically up until he's had a challenger in the election, Seth Bentham, who she supports in it. They also talked a lot about economic development and how it's important to bring more businesses to the county. Though when we heard West talk about it, he mostly just criticized the city of Grants Pass for not doing enough to spur development, but didn't really outline plans for what the county could do. Others had some plans like creating an economic advisory committee. They also talked about homelessness and kind of how the county should address it. And some of the candidates think that the county needs to do more to help Grants Pass with the problem.
And quickly, what do voters need to know about this primary?
Yeah, well, ballots are heading out at the beginning of May, and the primary is on the 19th, so they need to be postmarked or turned into a drop box by 8 p.m. then. And then also April 28th, next Tuesday, is the registration deadline if you haven't registered to vote yet.
Okay, thanks, Roman. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions of things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.